Future-proof extra.
With Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
On News Talk.
Flying is statistically the safest way to travel. But if you've been on a flight, chances are, at one point or another, you felt a little less safe than you'd like. You might spill your drink, get a sudden jolt, or feel that drop in your stomach. I'm talking, of course, of turbulence. But did you know that even though it might make you fear for your very life, it is essential to the way we live it? Ivan Marusic is a professor in the Department of Mechanical Engineering at the Melbourne School of Engineering. He joins me now. Welcome to the programme, Ivan.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. Pleasure to be here.
So when we talk about turbulence, what exactly are we talking about?
So turbulence is a state of fluid flow. And really, we can think of two regimes. One is laminar flow. So that's where flow is dominated by viscosity and the layers of fluid essentially slip across each other. And you get dissipation in that. So think of honey trickling. It's a very slow, things are quite uniform. If the inertia of the flow is large enough, then the flow becomes turbulent. So that's a state where things, they look unsteady, they're three-dimensional, the flow looks chaotic, and then we see mixing. So if you think of an erupting volcano, we see how complex the flow is. We have this large range of scales. That's a turbulent flow. Actually, we don't have a formal definition for turbulence. It's rather something when you see it, you know it. We know its characteristics. But it's essentially characterized by lots of mixing. So in the context of an aeroplane flying, what you experience is what we call free air turbulence. Now, that can be caused by a variety of things. Planes, commercial aircraft typically fly around 10 kilometers. That's the top of the troposphere. And that's where we get these large jet streams. Now, they are basically concentrated areas of flow and they are turbulent. So they, because of the shear, they become unstable and you have these pockets of turbulent fluid. And as you fly through them, you're essentially experiencing the up and down motion of that turbulent. But that turbulence, as you mentioned, is essential for life because that's what determines the way different gases, oxygen, CO2, mix and disperse within our atmosphere, same as pollutants.
Give me an example then. If we imagine what, say there was no such thing as turbulence and we had laminar flow either on an airplane or floating down a river or even just standing still in the field. If we eliminated turbulence completely, what would those scenarios look like?
Okay, so life as we know it on Earth really wouldn't be recognizable if we didn't have turbulence. For example, the ground would be so hot because of the heating of the sun that wouldn't be mixed by the turbulence in our atmosphere. But at the same time, your head would be freezing because that heat hasn't been able to be mixed through the atmosphere.
Do you know what sort of temperatures we'd be talking about?
We're talking about, you know, it could be potentially like 100 degrees variation. It's really dramatic in terms of the reliance we have on that mixing. If you think about a river, without turbulence, the only thing that could slow down the flow of a river would be friction due to viscosity. And that is not very effective. So essentially our rivers would run at 50 to 100 kilometers per second rather than 1 meter per second, which they currently do.
Whoa.
So essentially, you know, turbulence has that role of mixing both, as I said, gases, but momentum in a way to decelerate things. And that is essential for, again, as life as we know it.
So it sounds like turbulence is keeping us alive. I'm trying to imagine the evolution of the human form in that scenario. You'd probably never get taller than a foot, or maybe you'd have really skinny legs. And then like a round body, and then like a tiny head. It's a really interesting thing to think about. So it seems to me that turbulence creates this sort of mixy, happy medium type state for us in lots of different scenarios. But if we could reverse that, it could be hugely useful in terms of engineering, in terms of getting from one place to another, in terms of efficiency.
Absolutely. So there's a price for that. So losing all of that energy, as I said, the huge differences in velocity, say, that manifests itself in energy saving. So, for example, for myself, flying from Melbourne to Los Angeles, getting on an A380, that will consume, that one-way trip will burn about 300,000 litres of jet fuel. If you could remove the turbulence drag, due to turbulence around the aircraft, you'd only need about 1,200 litres of fuel.
So 300,000 to 1,200.
That's right. So close to 300 times the saving in terms of the energy cost. And actually, if you were to calculate how much energy we spend overcoming turbulence, so every time a liquid or a gas flows through a pipe, there are losses. Actually, the largest amount of energy consumption is to try to overcome turbulence. So there are pros and cons.
I hadn't thought about pipe flow, but of course, the world is connected by pipes. And if you have that laminar flow that you're talking about extreme efficiency, much less energy required to pump, and much less loss and wastage, presumably. I was hearing about a researcher, his name is Tobias, I think, who was looking at trying to reduce turbulence within a pipe. And in that closed scenario where you have control over the flow of the liquid, you have control over the shape of the pipe, is it possible to reduce or remove turbulence completely?
Under certain scenarios, so if you get to practical applications, so the type of, commercial pipes, the answer would be no. The transitions, again, going from the laminar to the turbulent state is a delicate balance between the inertial to the frictional forces, what we call the Reynolds number. But the point is, it's not really, traditionally we always thought there was a critical value which the flow goes from laminar to turbulent, but it turns out it's not that simple. So you can actually push the regime and maintain laminar flow to much higher conditions than we previously thought. And that's teaching us things about the origins of turbulence, how it actually comes about. One thing you can do if you have water or oil, so this is an example, the Alaska oil pipeline, which runs for many hundreds of miles, that by introducing a very small amount of a long-chain polymer, so we're talking about 10 parts per million, they can reduce the drag by up to about 50%. And that essentially dramatically cuts the amount of pumping power that they need. And essentially, I think they save something of the order of about $1 billion a year in those pumping costs over those long distances just by introducing these very long-chain polymers in small concentrations after each pump is activated. The mechanism for why that happens is still actually not fully understood, and there's a lot of active research trying to understand, one, what sustains turbulence, and then what can kill it. So this is, a very active area of research.
And this is, of course, a tricky one. Einstein famously worked on this, as did Heisenberg, and it beat them both. How are we doing with our supercomputers and our modelling technologies? How well can we model turbulence in the real world?
Well, as you mentioned, many famous people have worked in this area. It's over 100 years old. It's often referred to as the last great unsolved problem of classical physics. We have advanced a lot in the past 20 to 30 years in particular. So we do have equations for turbulent flow, for flow in general, called the Navier-Stokes equation, incidentally named after Sir George Stokes, who was an Irishman. But the problem is these are nonlinear partial differential equations, and we don't have the mathematics to solve those equations explicitly for a given set of boundary conditions in general. So what we can do, though, is we can compute, we can discretize the equations and solve them on a computer. The challenge, though, is that the number of grid points that you need far exceeds any of the computational power that we currently have and into the distant future, really. So what we typically do, say, if you wanted to model the atmosphere, you need to use a coarse grid, one that you can fit on a computer, even if it is the world's biggest supercomputer. And then we have to model what we've filtered away or what we're ignoring. So there have been a lot of advances in those modeling efforts. And I think most people would agree that weather forecasts, say the 7-day forecast, is much better today than it was, say, 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's largely due to our improved modeling of these phenomena. If you actually estimate, if you take the world's biggest supercomputer and you just ran, it dedicated full time, you know, on the order of 6 months to a year, you could probably compute the turbulence in a teacup fully. So obviously going to much more complex systems is much more challenging.
That seems like a noble cause to dedicate 6 months to a year's computing time on the world's largest supercomputer to figure out how airflow changes unexpectedly in a teacup. Has anyone come up with a theoretical or a practical idea for separating the turbulence in front of you to allow a much more efficient flight or drive? I mean, I'm thinking of all these aerodynamic cars that we buy thinking that they're slicing through the air. I'm wondering, is that a complete myth? Do they just look cool, or is the, you know, is the aerodynamics on my car actually helping to reduce or deal with turbulence?
It's very important. There are two types of drag. One is due to the thin layer on what we call skin friction drag, and then there's the wake drag. Now, in cars, it's the latter component, which is the largest. So what you try to do is make the vehicle as streamlined as possible to reduce the wake that you would produce. And you certainly know about the aerodynamics as the speed goes up, because the power, essentially the aerodynamic drag, goes as the velocity cubed. So the faster you drive, it becomes very significant, particularly for sports cars and anything going above, say, 100 kilometers per hour, because every time you double the speed, your penalty goes up by a factor of 8. So it becomes extremely important. And, you know, you don't even have to go at those speeds. Essentially, looking at sports like road cycling, you know, it's all about people drafting of each other, minimizing their exposure to the wind and being drawn along by in someone else's wake. That essentially is all aerodynamics. So it's extremely important.
But there's no idea on the table to, I'm sort of thinking of a device on a long stick in front of you that somehow deturbulences, that's not even a word, but that somehow turns the air from turbulent to laminar before you pass through it. Is that a ridiculous notion?
Normally, even if you're going into a completely still air, essentially there is no turbulence ahead of you. You're generating the turbulence. So you moving, the physical act of moving through the air is actually leading to flow separation and these drag phenomena, which is generating the drag through the turbulence. So you can't really separate the two. What you can do is you can try to manipulate or reduce that wake, so in other words, by streamlining. That's why streamlined cars are more efficient aerodynamically. The other way is by manipulating the surface. So normally what we would try to do is polish the surface to make sure it's nice and smooth, but what you can do is you can manipulate the surface in a way to, one, reduce both the skin friction drag and the effect of the wake. So if you think of a golf ball, they're dimpled. That is a very deliberate variation of the surface in order to interact with the turbulence. If we think of a shark, if you touch the skin of a shark, it's not smooth, rather it's rough. So there's these well-defined grooves which somehow interact with that layer of turbulence and reduce the drag, allowing them to go faster than they could otherwise. So there are many examples of these sort of things in nature. Another example, if you're moving through water, because obviously water is a lot heavier than air and leads to more drag, emperor penguins can generate enormous velocities to actually jump over onto ice shelves. So they propel themselves up to, you know, 1.5-2 meters out of the water. If you actually did a calculation of what power they need to do that, they actually don't have it if they were perfectly smooth. So what we suspect they're doing is they trap within their feathers bubbles, and then they release these bubbles as they accelerate, and those bubbles interact with that layer of turbulence around their body in a way to reduce the drag. So it's really amazing to see what methods nature has devised. And it's interesting, there are now ships that actually now release bubbles underneath the hull to reduce the drag that they experience. So there's many inspirations in nature for these types of phenomena.
Do you know, Ivan, I didn't know what to expect with a piece on the science of turbulence, but this has been absolutely fascinating. Ivan Marusic, a professor in the Department of Mechanical Engineering at the Melbourne School of Engineering, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Future Proof with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
Sunday morning at 10 on News Talk.